Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Rookrout.
And today we have an exciting episode planned for you because we will be reviewing Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. This is the prequel to Mad Max Fury Road, which was a big favorite at the Oscars when it came out almost 10 years ago at this point. And we will also be recapping the Cannes Film Festival, going through the winners and having a little discussion about, I think, what people thought of the movies this year and what we're excited to see, whenever that may be, whether it's at a fall film festival or when it's released later this year or next year.
Yeah, I love seeing all the press and hearing about all the movies. It was looking at first to be a pretty bleak set of films out of Cannes with some pretty middly reviewed films. But then I think it picked up in the later half. And yes, we'll mention all the winners, and a lot of those were a part of that latter half. And with Furiosa, I loved returning to this world that George Miller has created. We can see if it lives up to Fury Road. I think the short answer is no, but I think it's a fun time at the movies.
Yeah, so let's get right into Furiosa. Description here. Snatched from the green place of many mothers, young Furiosa falls into the hands of a great biker horde led by the warlord Dementis. Sweeping through the wasteland, they come across the Citadel, presided over by the immortal Joe. As the two tyrants fight for dominance, Furiosa soon finds herself in a nonstop battle to make her way home. This was directed by George Miller and stars Anya Taylor-Joy, Alila Brown, Chris Hemsworth, and Tom Burke. So I know that you were a big fan of Mad Max Fury Road when it came out, and still are to this day. But what did you think of Furiosa? I think it's kind of impossible not to talk about this in conversation with Fury Road just because it's a prequel. So what did you think of it, though, overall?
I had a good time. I love the camera work and all the action sequences. It's a nonstop thrill ride. Again, I think Fury Road does it better, but we get a lot of Easter eggs, and I like in the end how it does go pretty smoothly right into the timeline of Fury Road, intercutting certain sequences into the end credits. When the movie first started, there are titles that separate the film into sections, and seeing Chris Hemsworth for the first time, I was like, oh boy, am I going to like this? But I think as it went on, it figured out what it was, and it kind of got over some of those prequel-sequel hurdles that I was very happy about and added to the story. We got to see more of the wasteland and why some of those areas weren't in Fury Road, because they were totally destroyed. So I kind of liked how they added to the universe and in telling us more about these characters. And I think with the dialogue being pretty sparse, I think it's still a pretty decent screenplay. I think it's a more impressive thing that we've seen lately just in terms of the structure of the movie. But I think it should be a hit. It didn't do super, super well at the box office, but how did you feel about it?
I went into this with a lot of hesitation just because I love Fury Road. I think it is one of the great movies of that decade. It is this lean, mean action thriller. There's not an ounce of fat on it. It's incredibly creative. And I remember thinking at the time when I saw that, there's nothing like this. I haven't seen anything like this. It felt incredibly inventive. And then I think when the first trailer dropped for Furiosa, I was incredibly nervous because of the CGI, of the look of the film. It just felt like, do I need this? Do I need a prequel? Why is George Miller making this? All of that said, though, I did like Furiosa. I didn't love it. There are definitely, I think, some quibbles that I have with it now that I'm about 24 hours away from my viewing, that I've kind of thought about a little bit more of maybe what worked for me and what didn't. A big thing that didn't work for me, actually, was what you described about the end credits. As the movie finished up, I found the ending to be quite moving, actually, and really interesting in how we think about revenge or the revenge action film, the way that Furiosa feels and how that takes us into Fury Road. But the second that the credits cut in scenes from Fury Road, I was just reminded of how far superior that film is to what I just watched. And I thought, oh no, George Miller, why are you doing this? Why are you reminding us of a better film when we just watched this one? So that, I think, I wish that I didn't see those because it actually did have a negative impact on me as I was leaving the theater, thinking of how I had just wanted to watch Fury Road instead. And it's sort of, you know, that happens sometimes, I think, when you watch movies and they reference better ones, you start to wonder, okay, why am I watching this instead? And that's how I felt in that moment. But you talking about the beginning, I thought that the first chapter of this was one of the most successful pieces of the movie. I loved the first chapter. I found it to be sort of this biblical epic with a Dickensian feel to it that introduces the young Furiosa actually as a Dickensian character of sorts, someone who is, you know, stripped away from their home, who is orphaned, and who has to eventually rise through the ranks. I loved that opening, and I thought that Charlie Fraser, the actress who plays her mother, I thought was fabulous. I just really liked this intro, seeing her fight for her daughter and getting to see, you know, young Furiosa and her mother interact. That, I thought, really opened up the film in a smart way, in an exciting way. It's sort of impossible, I think, when you have a mother and daughter storyline opening your film, to not feel emotionally attached to these characters right away. And so I loved that. I thought it was really gruesome too and violent. It really established, I think, this as a film that felt very different to Fury Road right away. So I did really like that. And then I think it actually, what ends up happening that I thought was odd was that I expected after that first section for it to time jump far forward and for us to get Anya Taylor-Joy's Furiosa right away. But we actually spend a good amount of time with Alila Brown's Furiosa, the young version of this character. And what was interesting about that for me actually was that I did find that it dragged actually in a way that I wasn't expecting. I think just coming out of Fury Road, thinking about what this one could feel like, I felt like it did kind of lumber along a little bit and maybe spend too much time there. But I also loved this actress. I thought she was absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
She has no dialogue, but those eyes were so expressive. She could communicate so much with just a look that really actually I felt was reminiscent of the Furiosa that we get in Fury Road, which I actually found her interpretation more successful than Anya Taylor-Joy, which I was not expecting.
It definitely defied expectations. And I was thinking the same thing too. Like, I'm like, okay, when are we getting Anya? And we didn't get her until an hour in. But that also wasn't a problem because I did enjoy that first sequence the most out of, I think it was like the five sections.
Mm-hmm.
It just totally moves. And I think maybe that's the problem when you've made a film like Fury Road that is nonstop action and doesn't mm-hmm. give us as much of the information behind it, the lore of it all, unless you've seen the other movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's all action. It's all happening so fast. And I think here he went to define the characters, give them real development, which I appreciated throughout the different time periods as well. And that did slow it down for me. I think anytime there was a lot of dialogue or quieter scenes between only a few characters, I kind of stepped out. And it was the big war rig driving sequence that just totally blows you away. And like, that is what I wanted
mm-hmm.
the whole time. And we did get some really, really cool other sequences, but that one is my favorite. I mean, that's bringing back those ideas of Fury Road and what made that so magnificent. And my favorite part about it here is that it's not all the same. He's introducing new equipment and like weapons, and there are these sand skis that come out of nowhere and these parasails. So it was like very cool to see
mm-hmm.
that he didn't just repeat and give us like another guitar playing guy who I loved from, again, Fury Road.
Mm-hmm.
But he was adding on to. So I'm very appreciative that it wasn't the exact same.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that scene that you're talking about that occurs in the third section or the third chapter, where we are really introduced to Praetorian Jack, played by Tom Burke, If you're an original listener of Oscar Wilde, you know that I have been on the Tom Burke train since 2019. So I was very excited to see him here. I thought he was wonderful. I would follow him into the desert, as I wrote in my Letterboxd review. But this scene between the two of them, like when he's driving and Furiosa is under the rig maneuvering, that was just that electric Miller action filmmaking where I was on the edge of my seat. And that's also hard to achieve for a prequel because I think one of the difficulties with prequels is that you know that this character really isn't in that much danger because you know she survives. You know that we get her in a movie later on down the line, so we don't have to worry about a character death or anything going too horribly wrong. Now, she does lose an arm. We do learn how that happens, and I did love that. I thought that was really cool. But I don't know. It does, I think, remove some of the stakes a little bit, but in certain scenes, I didn't really feel that was a problem, especially in this one. I still found it gripping watching these two characters in particular and some of the other war boys and characters in the film. I really loved it. I felt like this was where the film was at its best. I love movies with people talking in rooms. You know this. I love dense dialogue. I love learning about systems and structures. We talked about that with Oppenheimer last year. It was one of the reasons I really liked that movie. And this one, I actually thought that those scenes sort of hit with a thud for me. I feel like if you, in a similar way to how you were saying, you kind of started to tune them out a little bit and you wanted to get back into the action of the movie, I felt like they didn't really have enough detail around the structures. Like that for me wasn't strong enough. They wanted to spend more time there, I think, and they wanted to, you know, build out the exposition a bit and carve out, I think, what these different spaces look like, what these different places look like, how they exist. But it felt sort of thin and really only disrupted the action and just added to the runtime. I don't think that the script in those moments was strong enough to match the rest of the movie. Another detail I really loved that he included was, of course, I think when we think about Charlize in Fury Road, we think about that buzz cut, her shaved head. I loved the scene when baby Furiosa cuts all of her hair off and makes the wig to trick Rictus Erectus. So when he pulls her hair, it just comes off and she runs away. I loved that. And that kind of gets into something else I wanted to talk with you about the movie, is that I was so locked in to the scenes with young Furiosa in particular. Again, thinking about it as this Dickensian tale or sort of like a Victor Hugo novel of this young girl trying to disguise herself as a boy and, you know, work among the ranks, figure out her identity and try to get back home. I loved that. But for me, I think this movie is a movie about Dementis, who we haven't talked about yet, Chris Hemsworth's character. I feel like this is his movie. And here, you can almost feel like Miller just cares more about Dementis. He cares more about this character, cares more about Hemsworth and what he's doing. That for me, this character and this performance fully overshadowed everything with Furiosa. And I love the Furiosa sections, but it also, I think, feels so imbalanced because Hemsworth is the one who gets the monologues. He has a role that is far talkier than anyone else in the movie. I mean, Miller, I think, is known for very little dialogue, and Furiosa has very few lines. And so I think when you give Hemsworth all of this meat to chew on, and it's a very hammy, sort of over-the-top performance, I think it's hard to walk away from it not thinking of Dementis and this character and Hemsworth's performance.
Oh, see, I don't come away from that movie only thinking about him or him the most. I think it's one of his best performances, but I'm also not a fan of Marvel, and I haven't seen all of those movies, but you can feel that Marvel type of wit here. You get that comedy from him like all the time, and it does work to an extent because he's this comic relief character in a way. Like, I kind of didn't get the nose prosthetic, I was almost expecting it to get eaten off or like something gross to happen to it. I just don't know how it added to his character. Again, it was this comic moment because of who we know Chris Hemsworth to be outside of Furiosa.
And to be clear, like, I personally don't get the like Hemsworth hoopla of this performance. I just feel like the attention was on the character, but I actually don't think he's funny enough or scary enough for this character. I think it's tonal whiplash with the rest of the movie, mm-hmm. where I feel like I can sort of understand what they're going for with Dementis, but for me, he very much is doing that kind of like smug Marvel type humor. And so for mm-hmm. me, I think I was expecting something totally different, like this very out there Hemsworth. I think it felt very similar to what we've gotten before. I think he's good. I don't think he's bad, but I felt that this character and the way that he played it didn't really work with the rest of the movie for me, because it's so bleak too. This film is bleak with a capital B. So there were times when I just kind of didn't really understand what they were doing with him as a character.
I do like how the character is set up, because like you're saying, this Dickensian tale, this little girl's mother is murdered by him, and it's this big revenge story of her getting back at him. And we know from Fury Road that he wasn't in that story. So even when he's talking to Immortan Joe for the first time, I'm like, you're going down. How is it going to happen? And so the whole movie, you're kind of waiting for him to be murdered in some way. And I think it is really fitting in the end to see how it happens and this story of rebirth and the peach. And I liked, yeah, with the wig, how it just falls mm-hmm. on the rock side and forms this beautiful tree. I think that's a great metaphor of the film.
I love those little details too. And yeah, that peach pit that she hangs on to mm-hmm. from her mother. And I love her drawing that she does of the constellations, the map to find her way back home. It looked like a Dr. Wu tattoo, which was very funny. But I loved that little detail too. And I kept thinking too about her arm and knowing her arm had to come off. I was like, oh no, is it going to be the arm with her tattoo? Is it going to be the arm that's going to lead her back home? And I did think a lot of the choices that Furiosa made and the choices that Miller made with her as a character did hit pretty hard when you think about Fury Road in the back of your mind, and certain shots then when you think of that character in that film. I feel now like they're even more impactful now that we have this prequel, which I know, like, even though, again, like I said, I have my own reservations with that, I think could change over time, like if I revisit this or think about it more. But I do think there are some things that really made Fury Road even improve for me, having this additional information about her.
Yeah, and he does that visually. He loves the saturation. We get all of those oranges and those blues at night. And that does make me think back, like when she has the tattoo, again, this metaphor for her not being able to return home, and then thinking back to Fury Road when they do get there and it's gone. It's nothing anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that adds to the sadness and the realization of where they're living and what their lives are like. It does mm-hmm. deepen things in such a great way that I wasn't expecting, but am so happy for. Because if it didn't, I would be very sour on this film.
Oh, for sure. And I think it's, you know, it's just hard. I think when you have something as incredible as Fury Road that really, I think, like we said, took the Oscars by storm, and that when you have that, it's hard, I think, to have a prequel that lives up to it. But I think that this one did in many ways complement it very well.
And talking about the Oscars, so Fury Road had 10 nominations. It won 6 Oscars. What do you think of its Oscar potential?
It's really difficult because this year there's just so much that we don't know yet. And I think if I had to make an early prediction, I just feel like Dune Part 2 is just going to be the technical juggernaut, not Furiosa. If I had to decide now, I think that, you know, people came away from that movie talking about how breathtaking the worlds were, the design, the production design, the costume designs, the cinematography. Here, we actually don't have John Seal, who is Miller's typical DP. We have Simon Dugan instead, who shot The Great Gatsby, shot 300. So it's a bit different, I think, than what we got with Fury Road. But I think all of this to say, I don't see this one as being the big Oscar hit that Fury Road was. One, because we have a major contender in Dune Part 2 when it comes to those below the line awards, but also that film is a much stronger box office success this year. And Furiosa right now is unfortunately flopping at the box office. I think it could have legs. We never know. But the thing is, too, with that is Fury Road wasn't a big hit either. I think people forget. It's funny how we look back on history, but I don't think that this will be the hit that Dune Part 2 was this year. So that complicates things as well. What do you think?
I don't think it'll be getting 10 nominations. I definitely think it will have a few. Visual effects, like we've mentioned, I think that is a shoo-in. There were times when I had vertigo watching this movie because of the angles that they were using and how they were shooting it. Like when the war boy jumps off of that cliff, I was just totally amazed. So I think with that and all the action sequences, the fighting, the explosions, the cars flipping over again, like all of that works to me. So definitely visual effects. I love the Fury Road score, but it feels mostly the same here. So I don't necessarily see that happening.
I did prefer this, though, to the Dune Part 2 score, since I did bring up that movie, another one that's kind of recycling themes from the first part or the earlier film. I did like Tom Holkenborg's work here. I thought it was very, very dramatic and ominous, even if it did wholly echo Fury Road.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I mean, some of Fury Road's nominations and wins, production design, costume design. I love seeing Jenny Beavan's name show up again. Makeup and hairstyling, sound, absolutely. I think they could all happen. It just depends, I think, what comes out later this year. We're going to talk about Cannes films, and maybe those will be showing up and taking spots. So it is tough, but I definitely think it's a contender come award season.
Yeah, I think so too. And if you could give this movie one Oscar, what would it be?
I'm going to go with visual effects, whether they're practical or CG or whatever they are. It looks amazing and it totally wraps you up in all of the action. And I think that's the most fun. Like, that's what I wanted from this, is just to watch some amazing things happening and not have to dig too deep. And it was 2.5 hours of clenching my jaw and I loved it. What Oscar would you give it?
I think I'm going to go with makeup and hairstyling. I really do love the grease eye black. It's a really, really good look. And how all of the war boys are styled. I think that, you know, prosthetic nose aside too for Chris Hemsworth's Dementis, I feel like there is some really strong makeup and hairstyling work here. So I would pick that one with a runner-up for Alila Brown, the young Furiosa, because again, I was so impressed by her. And we're hard on child actors sometimes, but I thought she was great.
She was great. If it were to come to this, Anya Taylor-Joy as lead or supporting?
I feel like it's hard because, yeah, she doesn't show up until an hour in. I think I would still put her in lead, though. I think it's a two-hander, but I would put the young Furiosa in supporting just because of how much time is given to the different sections.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that's how I'd run them. For me, Chris Hemsworth is a lead.
He's the one in both parts, and we have two Furiosas. So yeah, I was just curious. I almost wanted my one Oscar to be screenplay, just because I think the logistics of what we're getting, it's a very dense script, I feel like, even though there's sparse lines. And that to me, like Anya Taylor-Joy, that's another thing. Like, this was always marketed as her film. Mm-hmm. And to come out of it with so much of it being Chris Hemsworth, I don't think I knew he was in it until like a week or two ago, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think about it that way. And to have this movie with little dialogue yet be so successful, I think is actually really impressive in today's age and where we are with movies. So I applaud that as well.
Okay, let's get into our discussion on the Cannes Film Festival. I'm sad neither of us went this year. We have both been before. I think when you've been, it's hard to watch it from afar and just see all the reactions and not get a little bit jealous of everyone in the French Riviera just watching movies all day in one of the most beautiful places on earth. But Cannes has now wrapped up. And let's read through our award winners, and then I think we can just talk about the festival as a whole and what people were talking about coming out of it. But our Palme d'Or winner was Cody from a movie called Dog on Trial. Maybe he will be the new Snoop. Our Camera d'Or winner was Halfdan Ullmann Tondal for Armand. He is the grandson of Ingmar Bergman and Liv Ullmann, which is cool. The Screenplay Award went to The Substance. Best Actor went to Jesse Plemons for Kinds of Kindness. Actress, Greta Gerwig's jury did something very different. They actually gave the prize to four actresses: Adriana Paz, Selena Gomez, Zoe Saldana, and Carla Sofia Gascon for Amelia Perez. Mohamed Rasalouf won a special jury prize for Best Screenplay for The Seed of the Sacred Fig. We will talk about this a little bit. He fled Iran to come to Cannes to release this film. I'm surprised they didn't give him a higher prize, especially with the reception of the film, and they just kind of created their own award for him. I thought for sure he would win Grand Prix or the Palme d'Or, but they just gave him the special award here. Director went to Miguel Gomez for Grand Tour. The jury prize went to Emilia Perez by Jacques Audiard. The Grand Prix Award, which is the runner-up, went to All We Imagine as Light by Payal Kapadia, and the Palme d'Or went to Anora from Sean Baker. He's the first American to win the Palme d'Or since Terrence Malick won for Tree of Life. What did you think of the winners overall and just the reception to the festival, these releases? And then we can talk through, I think, some others that premiered there that weren't recognized by the jury.
Yeah, I think some of the most talked about films didn't even show up, which happens. That's not uncommon. I really didn't expect Megalopolis to show up after the response to that. But I think some of them here, again, mentioning the Oscars, we definitely are going to see some of these for the next few months. And some are being released in June, like Kinds of Kindness. The Substance was another highly talked about movie, this new kind of body horror that just got a release date of September 20th and being distributed by Mubi. There are so many neon pictures also. They bought nearly everything, which is great because they're a great production company. They have The Seed of the Sacred Fig. They have Anora. I think kind of like we mentioned on past Cannes episodes, is that we don't know a whole lot about these movies. We're relying on critics and people that have been at the festival and entrusting their opinions and reactions. So it does make me really excited to see these movies. And I think them going with Anora as the Palme d'Or winner is exciting, shocking. I cannot wait for this movie.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Anora as well. So Sean Baker is like not one of my directors, I will say. I am kind of all over the place with his movies, but hearing Greta Gerwig talk about this movie and just hearing from critics and seeing, I think, early reactions to it has me really excited. I also feel like a lead role for Mikey Madison is really exciting. I always think of her in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. There was a lot of praise for her performance out of the festival. I think some people thought she might win Best Actress. I also want to talk about Demi Moore, because that was another possibility, I think, for Best Actress for The Substance, which is this, I think, already sort of controversial movie, just in terms of the variety, I will say, of reactions that came out of the festival around this. But this is about a fading celebrity. I believe her character's name is Elizabeth Sparkle, which is just fantastic, who decides to use a new black market drug that temporarily creates a younger, better version of herself, and it's Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley. It sounds really interesting. I've heard it's very gruesome, a lot of body horror, and it will get people talking, and that's always a good thing. But yeah, I'm excited to see the renaissance of Demi Moore.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited for this one as well. So Emilia Perez, which won 2 awards, which I think is big for Cannes. They usually spread them out fairly well. This is about a lawyer who helps a feared cartel boss retire from his business and disappear by becoming the woman he's always dreamt of becoming. And I think that premise sounds really exciting. Definitely something that could be an Oscar player, especially with winning actress. We've seen past actress winners show up at the Oscars, at least in nominations. Is Selena Gomez the first Disney Channel Cannes Prize winner?
Well, with Selena Gomez winning here, with Zendaya's year, with Challengers and Dune Part 2, it's a good year for the Disney girls. We also have Carla Sofia Gascon. She is the first trans actress to win at Cannes. And I'm curious to see what Netflix does with this movie. I think it's going to do the fall festival circuit. So it'll probably go to a number of them before being released. Because, I mean, if it won 2 jury prizes, that's a pretty good sign, I think, of where it could go during award season.
And then with The Seed of the Sacred Fig, like I said, this is being distributed by Neon. It's interesting, like you mentioned, because the filmmaker, Russell Louf, fled his home country. Iran had sentenced him to 8 years in prison, and he secretly left his country in order to come to Cannes. What happens next, I have no idea, but this is somewhat similar to Jafar Panahi, who, when we were at Venice a couple years ago, we saw his movie No Bears, and he had endured a similar thing, where he was sentenced just for being a filmmaker. And I think his film was really provocative. That jury also gave him a special jury prize at that festival. So it's a similar sort of situation. Also, the irony of his movie being about the country's oppressive legal system and where he's at himself. So I'm really curious to see this. I think it could definitely be an international feature at least. And then depending on the release and the reception, potentially more.
Yeah. And I really want to see All We Imagine as Light. I think when people were talking about who was maybe going to win the Palme d'Or, this was one of those films that was very much in the conversation along with Anora. I think it was sort of between these two and maybe The Seed of the Sacred Fig, just with how people were discussing these movies. But I'm really excited to see this. It had so many positive reactions out of the festival. This was one of those, like you were talking about, the late, sort of late breaking releases that people were, I think when they saw it, they all of a sudden were saying, oh, you know, a great movie finally hit at the end of the festival. But this movie's about 2 nurses who live in Mumbai and just about their relationships. And then as well, Grand Tour by Miguel Gomez. I just saw a few images from this and it looks really beautiful.
And just one more mention. So you mentioned the Palme d'Or winner, Cody. And I love this because the movie that the dog is in, Dog on Trial, is literally about an animal defense lawyer who takes on this dog as a client, which is such a fitting follow-up to Messi winning for Anatomy of a Fall.
I was just going to say, we're going to get Anatomy of a Fall 2 where the hot lawyer defends Messi.
If only. And we had the grand jury prize Palme d'Or winner, so runner-up, went to Chin.
Oh,
I wanted to mention this dog was in Black Dog, which also won the Un Certain Regard Award. So that section, the festival talks about, you know, films that they wanted to get into the official selection but couldn't. So these are also really amazing films, and I'm excited to see that once it's released.
Yeah. I mean, when I went to Cannes, some of my favorite films that I saw at the festival were in that section. Like After Yang by Kogonada was actually in that section of the festival. So that's a really cool thing about Cannes, too, is that you can see official competition. You can see films that are out of competition in Uncertain Regard, in Director's Fortnight. They do a really good job of programming the festival.
And then just some other releases that were released out of competition or that didn't get awards. I mentioned a really big one, Megalopolis, Francis Ford Coppola's $120 million self-funded epic. This is being distributed by Le Pacte in France, but does not yet have a U.S. distributor. I am sure everyone is scared to touch this based on the reactions from this and having like a fourth wall breaking scene in the middle of a movie. I'm just like, I don't know what this is going to be. And I fear that it may be like a one or a half star review for me based on what people are saying.
I fear that this is going to be one where I watch it and I think it's some like insanely beautiful meditation on time and give it 5 stars and you give it a half a star.
I feel like it's you love it or hate it, or it could be the Madame Web 1 star heart situation.
It could very much. Francis Ford Coppola's Madame Web Megalopolis. Yeah, I don't know where this is going to end up. No one knows really, but I can't wait to see it whenever that is. I need to know everything about it. It looks bizarre. And Adam Driver is in it.
Adam Driver and WoW Platinum, Aubrey Plaza's character. I don't know. But it's out there and he's very happy to have made it. And I think we have to appreciate that as moviegoers, and in having something made again in this day and age is not an easy feat. And for him to do it on his own and say, screw it all, I'm making it no matter what, props to him.
We also had The Apprentice. This is the biopic about Donald Trump, starring Sebastian Stan and Jeremy Strong, who's playing Roy Cohn. Also, Maria Bakalova is in it as Ivana Trump. I was really curious what the reception to this one would be, because I did sort of wonder if this was going to be a Triangle of Sadness type of movie akin, where all of the Europeans just really embraced it and went for it. But that didn't really happen. I am not sure what's going to happen with this movie. I just know that the conservative media and anyone around Donald Trump is very mad about it, which, great. But I just feel like I don't know if I want a Trump movie in an election year. Ugh.
Yeah, I didn't really want this to begin with, but there's a lot of controversy from it. I think Trump's team sent them a cease and desist for this, and because of his depiction in the movie, and there's a rape scene apparently. So not sure. I don't know if this one is for me. We had The Balconettes, which is a horror thriller film by Noemi Merlant, who was in Portrait of a Lady on Fire, directed by Celine Sciamma, and she wrote this film. So their reunion is exciting to me. It's about these three women in Marseille who get stuck in an apartment in a heat wave. So I feel like that could be a really tense slow burn of a movie.
We also got Bird from Andrea Arnold, which I also thought might win something. It was, the responses to it were pretty positive, but this stars Barry Keoghan and Franz Rogowski. This will be released on Mubi.
C'est pas moi. We mentioned Leos Carax's next film ended up being a 40-minute self-portrait short of his life and filmography. This could be anything. I didn't hear anything about it, or I haven't looked it up, so I don't know how this did, but anything that he makes is going to be bonkers.
Yeah. I didn't really hear much about this either, but I'll watch it when that day comes. We also got Horizon, an American Saga from Kevin Costner. This premiered out of competition. We have part one coming to theaters in June. This is intended to be a 4-part saga. He hasn't written parts 3 and 4 yet, though. I will watch this. I love Kevin Costner. And between him and Francis Ford Coppola, these aging directors, they are just funneling their money into these passion projects. And I want to see them, this one included.
You know I'm not into Westerns. I am scared for this one. It'll be released by Warner Brothers. And yeah, part 1 and 2 had been announced. And then I think during the festival, Costner said something about this being 4 parts. And I'm like, oh my God. This 15-year pre- and post-Civil War saga of the American West. I don't know. We'll be covering it on the pod. We'll be doing this with Dances with Wolves. and his big Oscar winner there. Mm-hmm. But we'll see.
We also had Kinds of Kindness, which you mentioned is coming out June 21st from Yorgos Lanthimos. In addition to Cannes Award winner Jesse Plemons, this stars Emma Stone, Hong Chau, Margaret Qualley, Willem Dafoe, Hunter Schafer, and Joe Alwyn. It has an anthology structure and apparently is very different from his collaborations with Tony McNamara in The Favorite and Poor Things, and feels, I think, based on some comments from critics who saw the movie, a bit closer to his earlier films, like The Lobster, Killing of a Sacred Deer. So, you know me and Lanthimos, I'm probably not going to see this for a little while, but that's okay. I'm happy for everyone else who gets to see this.
This is our birthday movie. You have to see it.
I will be seeing Janet Planet. That has a June 21st release, and I loved that movie, so I will be seeing that for my birthday movie instead.
Well, I am very excited for this. Anything that is like Dogtooth, give it to me. No. I love the big cast, and I'm excited for another Lanthimos. So soon, yes, we'll see if this will show up at the Oscars again. I mean, pretty much every movie he makes does, but I was surprised to see Jesse Plemons winning, but I think that will likely fare well in a few months.
We also had O Canada from Paul Schrader, starring Richard Gere, Jacob Elordi, Michael Imperioli, and Uma Thurman. I think with Paul Schrader, with his recent releases, First Reformed, The Card Counter, Master Gardener, where do you fall with those? Did you like any of them?
I think I've only seen First Reformed.
You didn't see The Card Counter with Oscar Isaac and Tiffany Haddish?
Never on the pod did you say, yes, this is a good movie, you should see this.
No, I didn't say that because I don't believe that, but I just want to know
exactly
your opinion on it.
No, I haven't seen it. All I can say is Jacob Elordi in a jockstrap, fine. But I have a feeling this movie is not for me.
And that's okay. The Richard Gere part of the movie is for me.
Wow, not even Elordi anymore.
No, I mean, obviously Elordi too, but knowing that they're playing an older and younger version of each other, it's too much for me. Paul Schrader saw into my brain for a moment and said, how do I hurt her specifically?
Yeah, I think it comes down to maybe Paul Schrader being difficult for me. I don't know. I haven't seen much of his other works, though, so I think I just put them off, maybe.
Where are you on Paolo Sorrentino? Because we also got Parthenope, which is going to be released by A24. Mixed reviews. I think this will also hit additional festivals this fall.
Not a big Sorrentino fan, and I have been reading this title as Parthenope because I also don't think it's for me. Also, the premise just sounds a little too lofty for my taste. The brief summary is Parthenope is a woman who bears the name of her city. Is she a siren or a myth?
See, that sounds good to me. Like, I love the premise, but knowing it's Sorrentino, that's where I have trouble because I did not like The Hand of God, his most recent film.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know.
And then we had The Shrouds by Cronenberg, his latest to hit since Crimes of the Future. I think going into the festival, this was one of the most talked about movies, and it feels like it kind of fizzled. I didn't hear much about this one either, but this is with Diane Kruger, Vincent Cassel, and Guy Pearce, and it's about a businessman who builds a device to connect with the dead inside a burial shroud. Did you hear more about this, or how do you feel about this one?
I love Cronenberg. I also heard mixed things about this one, which I feel like that's good for a festival, for people to have widely differing opinions on things. And I really liked Crimes of the Future, and that one also had, you know, a wide array of responses. Some people really liked it, some people didn't. I think it just depends on if these kind of late Cronenberg films are your speed. This one about grief, that interests me. The premise itself, I think, does stand out to me. So this is of the list. This is one of the ones that I'm most excited for. The negative reviews don't really sway me here. Another one that I really want to see is called The Girl with the Needle, It's directed by Magnus von Horn. So this takes place in Copenhagen, where a young woman, she becomes a wet nurse for an older woman, and there it's supposed to be very dark and things take very insidious turns. So I don't know. I'm really excited about this one. It sounds very dark. It's based on a real serial killer. So that to me is a really exciting, dark, twisted premise for a film.
It sounds sort of like The Vanishing, which is terrifying. So,
oh my God,
that would be evil exciting.
Yeah.
And then I think just to mention some of the deals that happen. So these aren't of movies coming out this year, but they will be in the next few years. So I wanted to mention a few just from filmmakers that we know or that have released films at Cannes before. But first off, we have Alpha by Julia Ducournau. This was acquired by Neon, just like Titan. And this is quoted as being this genre-bending film. And I think anything by her is going to wow us and shock everybody. So I'm very into this, whatever this ends up being. The Death of Robin Hood, a film by Michael Sarnowski, picked up by A24 and starring Hugh Jackman and Jodie Comer. This is supposed to be like a new tale of Robin Hood. So this could be good, knowing Sarnowski made Pig a few years ago that we talked about and really liked. Sentimental Value is the team behind The Worst Person in the World reuniting. So Joachim Trier, Renata Reinsva, and the writer Eskil Vogt. This was picked up by Neon, and I am so excited for this. Anything this team does, I'm totally in for it. We both loved The Worst Person in the World. The next one, Close Your Ears, The Entertainment System is Down. This is Ruben Östlund's next film, picked up by A24. The premise is exactly that. People are on a plane and the entertainment system goes down. Havoc will ensue, I'm sure. The plane may even go down. We'll see. But this will star Keanu Reeves, Kirsten Dunst, Nicholas Braun, Daniel Brühl, and Samantha Morton.
What is it with Kiki, Kirsten Dunst, working with these directors who cannot keep their mouths shut? Alex Garland, Lars von Trier, now Ruben Östlund.
Maybe it's an A24 curse.
Maybe.
Next, we have The Monkey, which I am, again, very excited for. This will be directed by Osgood Perkins. It's distributed by Neon. He is also doing Long Legs coming out this summer. Terrifying horror film. Cannot wait to see. This stars Theo James, Tatiana Maslany, and Elijah Wood. And it's a horror film adaptation of a Stephen King short story from 1980. Very into this. And if they're picking up his movie before Long Legs even is released, this is a good sign. And last but not least, The Unknown, which is Arthur Harari. Remember Anatomy of a Fall, co-writer. But he is writing and directing this with Lea Seydoux starring. And this is picked up by Neon for a 2026 release.
Oh, wow. Okay, so I also didn't put two and two together about Arthur Harari and didn't realize that he directed a film called Anoda 10,000 Nights in the Jungle, which I saw when I went to Cannes. It was, I think, part of the Uncertain Regard section. It's almost 3 hours. I don't even know if this film was released in the States, but I highly recommend it if you can find it. It's about this man in Japan who refused to believe that World War II was over. And he carried out his life living as a World War II soldier until 1974. He lived on a remote island. Yes. I was just, I think, really hooked on this story and the performance from Yuya Endo, who plays Anoda. Yeah, watch it. I mean, I don't know if you will like this. It's a very, like I said, long, slow film, but for anyone listening, if that sounds of interest to you, I highly recommend it. It looks like it was only released in France and Japan and then a few places in Europe.
Wow. So I think to wrap up our Cannes chat, which film from this year's Cannes Film Festival are you most excited to see?
I mean, my unserious answer is Megalopolis, just because I need to know. I want to know what's going on with that. The fourth wall breaking thing. what Coppola has done here, why Aubrey Plaza's character's name is Wild Platinum. I just, again, I want to know. My real answer is All We Imagine as Light. Because of all the films that premiered at the festival, the reviews for this one were really positive, describing it as this really beautiful film. I've also never seen anything by this filmmaker, so I'm excited to, I think, dig into this one and her work and learn more about her. So I would say that. And knowing that it got runner-up and The Zone of Interest got runner-up last year, there's probably something really good here that I will like. What about you?
As much as I want to say The Substance, I think that's going to be a huge movie when that is released. I'm going to go with Emilia Perez. I think that story sounds provocative and wholly original, so I'm excited to see what that is. And with it winning two prizes, it getting third place, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, we have some great movies to look forward to. I can't wait to see all of these as we head into the fall. Next time on Oscar Wilde, we have another new release for you. We will be talking about Richard Linklater's new film, Hitman, starring Glenn Powell. This is out in select theaters now and will be out on Netflix on June 7th. I just saw this, though, and I'm really excited to talk about it. I thought it was so much fun.
Glenn Powell is a star. Well, thank you all for listening. That was our chat on this year's Cannes Film Festival. Hopefully, we'll get to go in the future again and maybe even together. It is disheartening to have to see all of the press and the live video feeds and everyone walking the red steps, and I would love to be able to go again. So keep an eye out for all the movies that we've mentioned. Let us know what your favorite ones are, and let us know if you liked Furiosa as well and what you think of it compared to Fury Road.
Thank you all again for listening. If you like our show, please feel free to rate, review, and follow us at Oscar Wilde Pod. And you can find bonus content on Patreon at patreon.com/OscarWilde.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.